Now, more on the big story of the week and the biggest story so far of 2026, the conflict in Iran, which began last Saturday with those joint US-Israeli strikes, which assassinated the country's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Earlier in the show, we heard from the region. Let's now head to Washington to speak to someone I always make a point of reading to understand what is happening in Trump 2.0. He is Ed Luce, the chief US commentator of the Financial Times and the author of many fine books on the United States. Ed Luce, thanks so much for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Great to be with you, Nick.
Ed, I spoke in the introduction about making sense of what's going on in Trump 2.0. And I think that was more difficult this week because we had so many different explanations about why the United States had gone to war in the Middle East. It was all rather dizzying. I wonder whether, you know, what you made of the messaging that was used to justify Operation Epic Fury.
Well, the messaging was kaleidoscopic is the word sort of I reach for. There were a ton of different rationales and still are a ton of different justifications, not only for going to war with Iran, provided by Trump and his key principles, but for their definition of what constitutes an imminent threat. So we started with Trump saying the Iranian people should rise up and he was behind them. Then we sort of rode back a little bit to simply removing Iran's nuclear and ballistic missile capability. Then it went back up to regime change again. And now, today, Friday, it's unconditional surrender. But the confusion of varying aims is underscored by the fact that that's the same day. The same day he's reiterated the call for Iran to unconditionally surrender, he's got the chiefs of the big American defense companies, Lockheed Martin, et cetera, round to the White House for an emergency meeting on how to ramp up military production. So the sense that there's a confusion between means and ends in Trump's mind has only been underscored.
Ed, I was going to say, I mean, the messaging was confused about why America went to war. Is there any more clarity about how it ends? What are the war aims and how will we know when they're met?
There isn't more clarity about what Trump intends, but there's been clarity all along about what Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu wants, which is regime change, which is removal of Iran's theocracy. And so that's been a constant, I mean, for the last week or arguably for the last few decades. But in terms of Trump's exit ramp, he's been given opportunities to scale down his ambitions, and he's spurred them so far, and he's actually escalating them again. But given the fact that he can be quite capricious, and if you recall last summer, the so-called 12-day war on Iran that Israel began, in fact, and that Trump ended, he can switch quite quickly. He was also calling at one point during that 12-day war for regime change. Then he decided, look, we've done this one and done, total and complete obliteration of Iran's nuclear capacity, and that's it. It's over. So you can't be fully sure that you can't really be fully sure of anything with this president.
It's an obvious line of questioning, Ed, but it's worth asking. And it's about the discrepancy between what Trump promised during the campaign, which was no new wars, and the reality of Trump 2.0, which is the launch of the most significant intervention in the Middle East since the Iraq war. I wonder, has the administration made any acknowledgement of breaking that campaign promise and departing from what was supposed to be this America First agenda?
Not a direct acknowledgement, no. I mean, perhaps the best bellwether of this is J.D. Vance, who was selected as Trump's running mate precisely because he was a sort of keeper of the flame of the America First MAGA philosophy of ending forever wars, nation building, policing the world, and so on. And J.D. Vance kept silent, uncharacteristically, for the first 3-4 days after the war began. And then he made a TV appearance in which his explanation for this 180 degree turn from what Trump was promising, that the peacemaker promise that he made in his inauguration address, and what he's doing today in the Middle East with Iran, was that the past wars were run by dumb people. This one's run by Trump. That was Vance's distinction. And I think I probably don't need to underline that that wasn't considered to be a terribly persuasive argument. So the administration hasn't really made much attempt to reconcile what, on the surface, at very, very least, looks irreconcilable.
Yeah, J.D. Vance's reticence was really striking, wasn't it? Somebody who is usually so prolific on social media had sort of days of radio silence on social media. Ed, I want to talk about the public reaction in America. I mean, often there's a rally around the flag effect when American troops and American airmen and women are involved in a military campaign. Often there's a rally around the commander-in-chief effect. Are we seeing any evidence of that? Because some of the earlier polls obviously were very kind of critical and very unsupportive of Operation Epic Fury.
Well, those early polls have continued to show similar results as we approach the end of the first week of this war. And it is, in the history of American polling, unique to begin a war in negative territory, somewhere between 27% and 38% of Americans approve of this war. And the disapproval is from the upper 50s to the up to 2/3 of Americans disapprove. That's unique. There's never been a war that's begun in negative territory, still less that deeply negative, to the extent that the poll numbers he's got today at the beginning of the war are the same as where the Vietnam War was. On the Gallup polling in 1971, 6 years after Lyndon Johnson had put troops into Vietnam or escalated the troop level in Vietnam. There aren't any troops in Iran. And this is 1 week into the war. So it is uniquely bad approval ratings for a war-fighting American president.
That's an extraordinary sort of stat, isn't it? We've obviously seen the splintering of the MAGA movement, strong criticism from one-time Trump loyalists such as Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. But on Capitol Hill this week, there were two key votes in the House and the Senate that did go the president's way. Is that a sign that there is support within the Republican caucus on Capitol Hill for this military action? Or are we hearing the same sort of rumblings here? What are we doing going into another war in the Middle East?
The support is very brittle. Right now, it's dutiful. And you can sort of think of Republicans on Capitol Hill much like the stock market. They're reacting headline to headline and holding their breath and hoping this ends quickly and doesn't do lasting damage to the American economy and the global economy. But it's brittle. You talk to Republicans in private, they're all very skeptical, not of killing the grand Ayatollah or of their views about the Iranian regime, but of Trump's ability to manage this war and the shifting sands beneath him in terms of his justifications for the war. There's real nervousness there.
You are listening to ABC Radio National Saturday Extra with me, Nick Bryant, and I'm talking with Ed Luce, who's the chief US commentator for the Financial Times. Ed, we were talking about J.D. Vance there. We've spoken about the commander-in-chief. I wonder what you've made of the new Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, a former Fox News celebrity who seems to be relishing this moment. In the past, defense chiefs have often been quite cerebral. You think of Robert McNamara during Vietnam, Donald Rumsfeld during Iraq, James Mattis, Trump's first defense secretary, as he was then called, was a warrior monk, he was called. He was very scholarly. What have you made of Pete Hegseth? He does not fit in that category.
He doesn't. I mean, it is, a convention of war, not just in the United States, but certainly here in Washington, that a face and a tone of sobriety and sort of deep seriousness is presented by the president, by the Secretary of Defense, and by other spokespeople for the administration. And clearly, Pete Hegseth is not following that convention. He's had 4 or 5 briefings now in the Pentagon alongside General Dan Kane, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the contrast between them, the sort of split screen difference between their tones, has really struck people. Hegseth has sort of taken on a kind of Marvel comic character, a sort of Supermanish language, real machismo. Takes great pleasure in showing videos of strikes that hit their target within minutes of them hitting the target, including that Iranian boat off Sri Lanka earlier this week. And yet, you know, when he was asked about the strike on the school that killed 170 or so Iranian schoolgirls, that's still under investigation, six days later. So his performance has been ranked badly amongst Republicans, and particularly amongst the parts of MAGA that, you know, disapprove of this war and believe it's a betrayal of the America First principles. They see Hegseth really as playing a kind of Fox News anchor role, but in a very different setting to where Fox News anchors normally sit. This is the Pentagon. This is the daily war briefing. And he's just not showing the gravitas that is befitting of that role. That's the general view.
Yeah, there's a frat boy vibe, a kind of immaturity about it all. And that immaturity is also seen on the social media feeds of the White House. You were talking about the videos there that Pete Hegseth delights in showing. What the White House has done is sort of intercut war footage with scenes from Hollywood movies, with the cartoon SpongeBob. It's used footage from the video game Call of Duty and what's called on that video game a kill streak. I mean, we were talking about the sort of dignity that previous administrations have shown during war. What have you made of the stream on social media of these kind of weird videos?
Well, they're not new. I mean, we had them last summer during the 12-day war in Iran. And we've had them continuously around the Department of Homeland Security, the ICE operations to deport immigrants. There is this complete abandonment at any attempt at reasoned sort of presentation of policy. It's just sort of meme-based. It's social media confected. It clearly represents a mindset that is radically different from what we have been used to up until now, even compared to Trump's first term, from American presidents, from American leaders. The sobriety, the sort of sense of public seriousness is utterly gone. And I don't know, you know, where this might go. Perhaps, you know, studies of Berlusconi's period as Italy's prime minister might, you know, give some clues, but it's a different sort of rather surreal impact on public debate than anything I've ever seen in a democracy.
Ed Luce, the US national editor at the Financial Times, at the end of a very busy week for you. Thank you so much for joining us on Saturday Extra.
It's my pleasure, Nick.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.